I don't think women should be cops, but I say nonstop, can you, any woman, put me in the handcuffs by yourself? The answer is no, it's not going to happen. And I'm sorry, but if you're a citizen, and I don't care if you're taller than me, older than me, more successful than me, if I'm on scene or if I come to your home because there's a problem there and I'm lawfully allowed to be there, guess what? It's my house until I deem the scene is clear. We have shitty candidates, shitty supervisors, shitty resources, and shitty support. And that's a petri dish for disaster for your first responder. So martial arts was, it was the foundation. I grew up very small, very insecure.
Founder and CEO of Man of War, Rafa Conde.
Dominic Izzo, welcome to the Man of War podcast. It is an honor to have you on, brother.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Good to see you again.
For those who don't know you, brief introduction, if you don't mind.
Somebody told me the other day that I'm a Renaissance man, and I've heard that term forever. I'm not going to lie. I never knew what it was. Had a friend of mine do a podcast with me, and he said, you know, you're a Renaissance man. And on the podcast, I admitted, you have to explain that because I don't know what that is. Here's me in a nutshell. I'm a near 50-year-old man. I just turned 49 over the weekend. I'm a retired police officer. I was in the nightclub and bar industry. I'm a published author. I'm a cigar smoker, a martial arts and gym goer, very opinionated. I'm a very dead set army of one who knows that he needs others in order to succeed. I'm a consumer of information. I'm somebody who listens to the information, then knee-jerk reaction reacts to it, but then at the same time calms down and says, let's discern this a little bit. I like to think that I'm a guy who knows what he is and knows what he wants, but at the same time is constantly seeking more and in an ever evolving journey of who I am. Like in your content, you're so right when you talk about how many times a man reinvents himself in his life. When I heard you say that, that's who I am. I'm somebody who is in a perpetual state of reinvent, master, reinvent, master, reinvent, master. So that's on a whole, that's who I am.
All right, let's jump right into it. Martial arts, you know, that's a big thing for me. Love it, live it, breathe it. I think it saved my life multiple times. More importantly, I think it has built me to who I am today. Talk to me about what the martial arts means to you in your world.
So martial arts was, it was the foundation. I grew up very small, very insecure. My dad was a 4-star athlete in school. And then it was me who never did anything. And at 11, 12 years old, my mother goes, pick a sport. You're going to do it. Right. I had a mother who she forced me to do stuff. And then ultimately I fell in love with it. So I thought I'm too short for basketball, too small for football. I'm not coordinated enough for baseball. I'm going to purposely pick the hardest sport there is, knowing she's going to say no. So I said, can I wrestle? And she said, yeah, you can. So she it backfired. I got sent to my first wrestling camp at 12 years old. And I'll never forget it. It was at a Catholic high school. And it was a guy named Coach Cruz. This was like 1988, I think, or 87 or 88. And I'll never forget, they're teaching us takedowns. And I go to shoot in for what's called a double leg takedown. At the time, I didn't know about it. And the next thing I hear this or feel this seething pain in the top of my head, this heat. Like, what is this? This guy had a handful of my then black hair, thick black hair, ripped my head up, and he's screaming at me, pick your head up, you commie pinko fag. And I remember going home and I was talking to my mom. I'm like, you know, I knew what a fag was because I was in school and we did that. Yeah. But what's a pinko and a commie? After that, I fell in love with wrestling. So I spent my teens wrestling, and I discovered the power of what that sport can do for a man. It taught me more about myself. It taught me how strong I was, how good I was, how that when you're on your back getting pinned, that your team isn't going to help you. Or if you're winning, yeah, accept the win in singularity, but honor it as your team. And when I got older and I couldn't find a martial art that I liked, but I wanted to continue because I love that competitive side of me, I couldn't find anything. I tried Shotokan karate. That was kind of cool, but wrestling always had my heart. Boxing, well, there wasn't really boxing available for me in the suburbs of Chicago. And I started to watch Jeff Speakman films, The Perfect Weapon and all of his. And I was like, this guy's from Arlington Heights, Illinois. It's two towns over from me. I got to try this Kenpo karate. And there was no Kenpo karate schools, but I found something called Wing Chun. And I'm like, I got to see what this is. Immediately fell in love with it. I'm a shorter man. I'm 5'7". And I found that Wing Chun was the answer to everything I looked for in combatives, because that was the number one thing I wanted. I like discipline. I like structure. I like learning a new skill set and mastering it, but I like to fight. And I hate to admit that. I like the competition of fighting. And wrestling was always my saving grace, but I didn't know how to throw hands. I didn't know how to do any of that. When I met the teachers who taught me Wing Chun, I discovered that this is the answer, that everything lives between the gap that is in bridge between a man and his opponent versus that space where you go into a clinch. I started that in 1996, fell in love. I've been doing it since. I've been training and teaching for all this time. And to me, I say all the time that it's kind of shitty, but it's an analogy. Wing Chun is my mistress and wrestling is my wife. That's how my life has been really involved in those two aspects of it. And the principles, the concepts I could talk about forever, but Wing Chun has been the foundation for the last at least 25 years for me, for everything I've succeeded in.
I studied Wing Chun for a while also, and it's the philosophy behind it. You know, I remember Si Lum Tao, which is the initial form, working it. And it was very, that's at the beginning stages of my journey in the martial arts. And for some reason, for me, initially, the Chinese martial arts, there was something about it. Remember, I'm 54 years old right now. So we're talking in the 80s when, these martial arts movies, in my opinion, the greatest martial arts movies ever made, were back in the 80s. There was something powerful. There was something almost magical about, watching ninjas and watching, the old school kung fu movies and that kung fu theater. I loved it. There was something about the Chinese martial arts. So I really started to dive into, Wing Chun. And then I switched over to Hok Leung Kung Fu, which is, Black Dragon Kung Fu, which is a very, very low grounded Southern style of Shaolin style Kung Fu. But for me, it changed my life. Then I transferred over to, Judo, Japanese style, and Aikido, and so on. But it has been transformational. And you mentioned that we can sit here and talk about principles and philosophies and strategies. Do you feel like the martial arts, a lot of these principles can be applied to life?
Every one of them can. And I'm going to tell you flat out, when you just told me what your resume is, that gives me even more comfort knowing that you know what you're talking about. Southern Chinese martial arts are some of the hardest combatives there are. Southern Mantis, Wing Chun, yours, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Then you go into Aikido and Judo. I mean, we're talking combatives. We're not talking martial arts for the sake of arts. We're talking martial. So number one, I'm very impressed with your background on that. Where it got to me, there was two moments where I realized that Wing Chun was legitimate for me. And, I can't stand it how many people now you put out Wing Chun has been so watered down and, let me see it work in the MMA and all this kind of stuff. And that's a whole different topic of conversation.
All right. So these martial art components, these principles, these strategies in your life, how have you used them best?
Problem solving and information that comes in. When I first started learning Wing Chun, like I said, one of the biggest principles was relaxation and Bruce Lee's Be Like Water. I very infamously known for not being a Bruce Lee fan. I can get into that later on, because Bruce Lee did learn Wing Chun for 3 years, came to the United States, and then, in my opinion, messed it up a little bit. But when I first started learning about the concepts of Wing Chun, there was this whole big, you got to relax. And being relaxed when you fight is a very counterintuitive concept. The analogy we were given is, if you go to pick up a cat or a baby that's sleeping, don't they feel heavier than when they're awake? And you're like, yeah, they do. Well, your punches are going to hit harder when you're relaxed. And you can't drive with the car by hitting the gas and the brake at the same time, can you? No, you can't. Well, you got to be relaxed to flow. So when I started seeing these concepts, and the biggest one was Be Like Water, to where if you are water going down the road, right? And I'm, down the stream, and I'm flowing down, which is my punch from point A to point B, and water meets an obstruction, like a boulder, a down tree, any a wall. Water's going to flow around the obstruction to continue forward. So when we had learned in Wing Chun that your punch goes downrange, it meets an obstruction, your punch, your parry, your block, whatever it is. If I'm relaxed physically wise, I can navigate based on the energy you're giving me the next movement, right? The next attack. When I started to see how that applies in real life, I was like, this is incredible. Meaning you walk into a domestic and there's a woman in the kitchen and she's screaming and you're so focused and tunnel vision on her and you're not relaxed, you're not going to see the guy that comes out of the bedroom with a baseball bat. But if you go in and you're relaxed and you absorb all the information, your peripheral vision is going to pick it up faster. or even personal. It's like Vince Lombardi said, it's hard to be focused when you're confused.
Yes. Well,
if I'm all tensed up and I can't solve personal problems when I'm angry, when I'm focused on the negative, I have to be willing and open for new information. So the Wing Chun principles, I just started to see how they apply in life. And I was like, I want to continue this. It was an immediate positive reaction.
Love it. Love it. Okay. So let's dial into who you are as a person. So I've seen some of your videos from years and years ago regarding martial arts. And then at one point you were running for sheriff, and then there was some things that you didn't like about law enforcement. There were some people, you know, that you went head to head with. You know, talk to me about that, because here you are today. I've seen you kind of reshape who you are as you have grown. So I just want you to take me back the time when maybe you were in law enforcement, coming out of law enforcement, and then what triggered you, or what kind of was the turning point in your life that you said, you know what, I want to head this direction, the direction that you are headed now?
Every single direction I head is based out of a selfish, personal necessity to avoid failure. I am the most insecure man you will ever meet, because I am terrified of not living to whatever potential I've gotten, right? Whatever God gave me, whatever gift it is, I am utterly terrified not to live to that potential. It costs me so much because I'm an idealist. I used to work in a 4 a.m. bar, and I thought it was a great career. And then somebody one day says, you'd make a great cop. So just for shits and giggles, I filled out an application. And from the day I filled out the application to the day I got hired was 4 weeks. And I heard all these people say, are you kidding me? It's taken me 9 tests to try to become a cop and this and that kind of stuff. When I became a cop, it's not that I didn't take it seriously. It's I didn't understand the responsibility. I actually went in to be like, okay, this is a job that it's secure. It's a government job. I'm not going to go anywhere. X, Y, and Z. I took the idealist side of me for integrity. And that fell into place very, very quickly. I was thinking about it today, because integrity is everything to me. It's the foundation of everything I do. I was telling a story earlier today about how I knew that I was on the right path, where it was 2002. I'm behind a guy on afternoons and I wanted to pull him over bad. And I went, you know, I don't know if I see a seatbelt on. And I told myself in that instance, no, you can't do that. Because the second you wind up compromising what your integrity is, it's a seatbelt today. Tomorrow, what are you going to do? You going to plant something on them? So it was really kind of like shocked at myself that I allowed that thought to get in my head. And I swore to myself, I will never violate the Constitution. I will never do anything like that, because I'm in a position that I have the lawful right and authority to take away somebody's freedom or life on a daily basis. And I get paid for it. And I'm sorry, but if you're a citizen, and I don't care if you're taller than me, older than me, more successful than me, if I'm on scene or if I come to your home because there's a problem there and I'm lawfully allowed to be there, guess what? It's my house until I deem the scene is clear. And I started to go, that's a responsibility. I cannot take this lightly at all. And people will say that I got a chip on my shoulder. They'll say that my ego swelled. No, I just believed in, yeah, we work for the people. And today's victim is tomorrow's offender. And just because Joe shit the rag man, you arrested him for drugs today or driving DUI or whatever, doesn't mean tomorrow he can't be robbed and doesn't need your help. And that's a very hard line for people to accept. So the responsibility for being a cop, I was like, this is the greatest responsibility I'm ever going to have. When I started to see that it was just a job to command staff, and command staff's job was apparently to torture and punitively punish patrol officers and keep them in line and stats that they had to turn over to the village to justify officers, I really lost hope in it. Really lost hope in it. We had in our department, my chief was one of my mentors and idols, massively. I love the man like a father figure. And we found out that, you know, they were recording us on our body cameras 24/7. We didn't know about it. Most body cameras have the 30 to 60 second buffer of video only. Then the audio kicks in when you hit record. Ours are recording constantly every 7 minutes and 1 second. It was a feature that the company set that we just didn't know about it because the department didn't have to tell us it was on. We entered in a federal lawsuit because we were seeing ourselves defecating in the bathroom. You could read the text messages on my phone. And it took them 9 months to ding me on a department policy, but they found a department policy on me that I violated. I had taken photographs of two separate instances of death investigations, and I sent them to a friend of mine. You know, this is what I'm on today. And they said, well, you violated department policy by disseminating department property without expressing or express permission of chief of police. You can resign or we'll fire you. So fire me. So absolutely. They fired me. It was a 3 years of hell, offered me a good chunk of money. And I said, no, I said, I have to have my name reinstored. It was one of the greatest victories on the planet to see the day that the chief signed the memo that said you are fully reinstated. And I retired the next day, but that was, my name was everything. My name was damn well everything. And I'll own up to anything I've done, but law enforcement to me was the epitome of responsibility for being a real good person. During that time, I'll finish the answer to your question, we had a death investigation up by us. It was a G.I. Joe Glenowitz, and he was a Fox Lake lieutenant that was shot and killed one morning. And we had this manhunt for three guys who killed him. 2 months later, it turns out to be a lie, and he allegedly embezzled, and he did all this kind of stuff, and he committed suicide. And my department was involved with that investigation too. People were coming up to us, and they were thanking us during that time because there was this heightened sense of, we have cop killers on the street, and all of a sudden people like the cops again. And I'm walking to the gas station to get coffee, and people go, officer, thank you for your service, shaking our hands. And I'm like, man, you never see this. You know, 9/11 was the last time I experienced this. And it hit me, and I did a video that went viral, and I said what it really means to thank a cop. And what I realized is the job is all about, you're calling me to your home, your dog is missing, your neighbor's playing the music too loud, your kid just got beat up in school, or somebody got stabbed, raped, shot. You are expecting a man or a woman to show up on your doorstep at the highest level of their capability to solve your problems. That's a pride issue. I don't want anybody solving my problems. The day that I got to admit I need somebody else with help, then all of a sudden, I want the best. So I started to look, how fit am I? How well do I know the law? How good is my firearms proficiency? How good is my report? I started to take it a lot more seriously when I realized, oh my God, this job is the most basic level of reflection of responsibility as me as a man. And if bringing that to every single shift, then I should not be a police officer. So to answer your question, every time I take on a new task, it's to meet the highest standard or version of myself. And it's exhausting, it's lonely, it's very stressful, but I like to think that I look back and I see that it's rewarding because it takes me to the next level when I do.
What do you think law enforcement is today? I mean, I look back on where I started. I came up in law enforcement in 2004, 2005. And I see it where I retired just over a year and a half ago. And it took almost a 300 degree turn, almost full circle from where I started. I mean, it used to be the officer's word was gold in front of the state attorney's office. Then it turned out to be where without video, your word didn't mean shit. The way that these cameras were brought in specifically at the beginning stages of law enforcement, and they started putting the burden more on the cameras than they did on the officer. It's almost where officers were getting fired for not turning on their cameras, even though there were new systems in place where it wasn't the customary thing where an officer remembered to turn the fucking camera on when they arrived on scene. It took me months and months and months and months to remember that shit, especially after a guy that's been on board for 15 years as a cop. So I started to see the turn of law enforcement. And nowadays, I said my story from the moment that I said, that's it for me. It's a very sad story, but a very real story. But the bottom line is, it's not the same that it was years ago. And it's sad because there's a lot of blue brothers and sisters out there who are putting their life on the line, who are doing a great job, but their agency is not supporting them at all. They're nickel and diming them. They are writing them up for bullshit reasons. And they're making them hesitate often, way too often on the job. As a police academy instructor for defensive tactics, for firearms, we were trying to train these men and ladies to get to a higher level and to have a, you know, keep their head on a swivel when they were out there. But even the police academy training went down the freaking toilet. And that's why I left the police academy. I don't know where it is and we're in your area, but the shape of law enforcement here in Florida, not a good one. Talk to me about how it is over there.
Standards a joke across the board and what I think they're doing. If you told me a couple of years ago that they're looking to federalize the police, I would have laughed in your face. And now I think that there's some truth to that. I said it all the time. I'm very sexist, and I will say this. These are my words. These are not your words. We've never had this conversation, so I want to make sure that nobody hears this and thinks you arbitrarily agree with me. I don't think women should be cops, and I have very good friends who are female police officers. But I say nonstop, can you, any woman, put me in the handcuffs by yourself? The answer is no, it's not going to happen. We started to see that in even fitness standards when I was a kid. And I say, my mother tells me, you know, you wanted to be a cop when you were a kid. I said, no, I didn't. She goes, yeah, you did. She said, we had this conversation that you couldn't because she knew I would never grow tall because of her family. There was a height requirement, 5'8", right? Then there was the college. You have to have a minimum of 2 years. Well, I'm glad I went to a department that didn't require that. I've said it a million times. I'm 49, you're in your 50s. What 21-year-old boy comes out of school, can knock on my door because the neighbors hear loud noises, and then wants to solve a problem between my girlfriend or wife? And what world experience do they have? Then you talk about defensive tactics. We know there are studies out there because the world, of course, is all up in arms about the police using force against unarmed blacks. Well, no, there's Force Science Institute has studies out there that says that police officers hesitate on community colors far greater than they do whatnot. But
yes,
they don't know. They also don't know how to use their mouth. I was a great cop because I knew how to use my mouth because I came from retail and the bar industry. And if I was a piece of shit to you in the bar industry, I wasn't going to make money. So I had to learn how to talk to people. Same thing. I don't care how tough I was. There's always somebody tougher. And you know what? The cameras are a great thing, but they only show what the public wants to be seen. And I knew that, you know what? I got to be able to talk people into handcuffs. So people don't have that skill anymore. The problem with the video cameras is, I say this, they should be left on 24/7. Absolutely. They should be in the car. They should be wherever. They should constantly be streaming live so that the public sees the shit cops have to deal with. They have full access anytime to back up and see the real circumstance. And then they're given the caveat, right? Where, yeah, your officer's going to go up to the car and Karen's going to give him attitude. He's going to go back to the car. He's going to shut the door and go, what a fucking bitch. But you have to understand he's still a human being and that's his safe space to purge that. The cameras were a good tool, but you're 100% right. Command staff and the state's attorney do not back up, or district attorney, depending upon your state, do not back up police officers. The cops are the first on scene. They are pitted with the public and command staff, who, I don't care who says what, people just do not understand. When you piss off your sergeant, then the next day you find out you're assigned to the squad car that doesn't have the working AC, you know, in the middle of July, when it's, you know, 98 degrees outside, you know, and you've car. No, it's a mental screwing up. You left your boots on top of your locker instead of inside your locker. Write me a memo and request them back. People have no idea how petty command staff gets to your officers. They're trapped in a squad car all day long. Most towns, most cities only have one man's cars. So you argue with your wife all day. You go to work at midnight. You're working midnight. It's 2 a.m. You don't know if she's out with somebody else or what she's doing behind your back. You're forced to stew in your squad car all day long. Sometimes it's February, shitty degree. It's -100 degrees outside, right? And then all of a sudden you get a call of something stupid. You get out of your car and you're going to take it out on somebody. There, the lack of resources for police officers mentally is vile. They're so abused. But the quality of candidates that we're getting, that's just as bad. That how you tell me how this is 2024 and the use of force scenes we see with blatant abuse of power are still happening. So we have shitty candidates, shitty supervisors, shitty resources, and shitty support. And that's a petri dish for disaster for your first responder.
Let me backtrack a little bit about women cops. I've said this all along. I don't think women should be cops. They make great investigators to a certain extent, but as far as beat patrol cops, I've had to be in positions and put myself in positions where I've had to rescue them from getting their ass kicked over and over again, many, many times over. Also, I believe this is a very direct, I'm very direct when I speak. You know, if a woman gets emotional from a defensive tactics and a firearms trainer, women, they resort to a higher force level a lot quicker than men do, a lot quicker. With that said, you know, woman's not feeling good. She's on the rag, whatever it is. She can become a total pain in the ass. As a matter of fact, I would highly, whenever I had a woman sent as a backup to a scene that really took more gentle verbal approach, I would typically cut her off and, you know, say no backup needed. And that's just the way that I rolled for many, many years. And the thing is, it's not just me. Many, many cops that I know feel the same exact way. Now, with that said, as cops now, especially here in 2024, I look back and I start kind of going back into the beginning of my career. It's not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. There's no sense of honor, very little. It's just not there. Everything is about, you know, command, you know, coming down on the, you know, lower line troops. You know, most of my career was narcotics undercover. So I was detached to the DEA and all sorts of squads and tactical units. So as far as a beat cop, you know, give or take in the shoulders of my career, you know, probably a total of 5 years, 6 years. Okay. But still, I mean, that is the hardest job. But with that said, I'm going to kind of trampoline into another subject here that has to do with cops, and it has to do with just our society in general. And that is where we are now. Okay. Talk to me from a patriot's point of view. You know, we have a society right now where, I don't know, I look left and I look right and I see weakness across the board, just weakness in every way, shape, and form. I see it from our leaders in this country. I see it from leaders in law enforcement agency and for first responder agencies. I see it across the board. Where are we as a country right now with this poor, horrible, shitty ass leadership?
We're broken. We're broken. And I said that I've held a very unpopular opinion for the last 3 years, and that it is law enforcement's fault that we got to this point. If you look at the beginning of the pandemic with the lockdowns, how dare police officers enforce non-mask wearing people, remove them from village hall meetings, arrest them on beaches. I knew we had a problem when I posted about this in early 2020, and I had somebody said, well, Izzo, you're no, publicly comment on my Facebook, you're no longer a cop anymore. You don't know what it's like to have to worry about struggling to, you know, put a paycheck, you know, to feed your kids and roof and put a roof over their heads. And I went, did you just willingly admit online that you're okay with violating somebody's constitutional rights to keep a paycheck? Deleted comment, blocked me. And I started to see that a lot. If people were not terrified of being arrested, there would have been no lockdown, nothing. The number one reason that people obeyed any type of lockdown, and I don't care if you believe the pandemic was real, I don't care if you took the vaccine, that's not my business, right? I don't care about any of that. What I care about is being told what to do when information blatantly contradicts my beliefs. If I want to go to the grocery store, fine. But how many people didn't because they were worried about going into a grocery store without a mask because the police would be called? If every cop had stood in solidarity and said, I'm sorry, you want me to arrest this person for walking around your store in a mask or not a mask? That's not a part of my constitutional oath. If they had stood in solidarity and said, we're not going to allow this, 100% would have been an issue. They're doing this everywhere else as well, too. This two-tiered party justice system problem. I don't care what side of the politics or political aisle you're on, Trump, Biden, I don't care. You can't have one candidate do one thing and the other candidate do it and get arrested. I said every cop when Trump got arrested, I don't give a shit if what they thought. Every cop should have stood down for what they did and said, we're not going to be in the booking jail today. We're not going to escort him in. It's a free for all. You do what you want. Call in the Secret Service for all we care. We have cops who are too worried about keeping a paycheck than honoring their oath. And that's exactly where we're at. And that's why they're hiring a much easier manipulative candidate, mm-hmm. to where you're going to get to the point where, all right, it's a roll call today. We got to go to 123 Main Street. All right. We got to go to John Smith's home today and seize his firearms. Sarge, why? We just had his wife, red flag law, right? She said he's going to hurt himself. Okay, we're going to go. They're blindly questioning anything to keep a paycheck and keep that status. And that's, where did we see this before? I know that the Jewish topic is a hot one, but we saw this for Jews with the concentration camps who turned in their own people. So if you would have asked me this a couple of years ago, I would have gone, no, you're out of your mind. Within the last like three years, 100%, cops are the breaking point for society crumbling. If all they did was honor their oath, we would not have this problem today. Politicians would be terrified of the people, and you would see our government actually run correctly.
Where do you see our country headed here towards the end of the year? Do you think that we have a shift in command? Do you think that maybe people start waking up and seeing where we are really as a country? And then also, you know, let's talk a little bit about masculinity. You know, we are the laughing stock right now of the entire world. Our president is, in my opinion, does not have an ounce of masculinity. This man walks around aimlessly, and I'm embarrassed for our country. We need an alpha male. We need, in my opinion, we need someone that could, you know, throw it down and be ready to do what it takes to gain this country back. What are your thoughts?
I think we're going too far to one end. Now, I did vote for Trump. I do support Trump to a degree. I don't like the constant attacking bullshit. Trump needs to be a king maker. And he's in the position now where if you look at just like the last round of him versus DeSantis, I laughed at the name calling, you know, when he first ran 2016. Yeah, do I believe Rosie O'Donnell's a pig? 100%. You had to fight back because our masculinity and that locker room talk was under attack. I'm sorry. I love jokes. I've told the most inappropriate jokes. I love women. I love being masculine. I love to be the, you know, steak eating, cigar smoking guy behind closed doors. And if you're going to attack that, well, fine. I'm going to bring it to your face. We established that. To continue that type of rhetoric, what he's doing is he's, in my opinion, calling to action fanatics. There are a couple of social media influencers out there that do the same thing. Where the problem is as men, we've stood by for so long. Right? Because we protect and provide. And I'm not married. I have no children. And I grew up in an Italian household where my father worked nonstop and my mother ran the household. And I thought that's how life worked until you watch a woman who's highly emotional make the wrong decisions and the household goes to shit because we're all led under terror, not respect, responsibility, and proper leadership. So when we have this, now you're going to have a pressure cooker. Men have we've passed the responsibility, right? Yes, dear. Well, whatever, dear. And now we've been beaten so hard. The only two responses are to roll over and die or bite back. Well, now our bite back is going to be so extreme because we allowed the shit to get to this way that I don't know what's going to happen in the next few years, but it's going to keep happening, right? So like these drag shows for kids. I'm a 49-year-old man. I've been to drag shows. They're an awesome time as a consenting adult who knows what's going in. This thing, you bring it to a kid, you out of your fucking mind. Any type of blurred line with sexuality, that's insane. Why are men, not women, why are men not going to every one of these events, looking at these coward cops who are there saying, you're allowing this? You should be standing with us. We should be going in and forcing every person with a child out of this place. We allow it. And what do we do online? Let's share a meme. Let's share a podcast. Let's listen to so-and-so talk. Oh, yeah, we're going to listen to this one. And that's all we do. So sadly, I hate saying this because I don't want to get on any flag list, but I understand it. We have done no action, nothing. We've taken it. And now the only way out of it is to act at the highest level of aggression possible to balance the scale. And that's going to be disastrous. I'm sorry. I want a good, easy life. I want to go to the gym, eat pizza, smoke cigars, ride my motorcycle. I want to do whatever. I don't want to go to war. But sadly, I don't think war is the way that people understand that it's going to be. It's going to be a very messy, localized, intimate setting that we're going to have to counterbalance. And I don't like it, but it's the reality because there's no other way out of it.
Our kids. I know that you don't have kids, but I'm sure that you have a place for kids in your heart here, the young generation that's being exposed to this, you know, horrific, in many sense, absolutely just devilish content. I mean, you've seen it in public schools and kindergartens all over the place and just making it okay for a young kid to say, well, today I feel like I want to be a woman. So let's go. Let's have these, you know, quote unquote operations or start taking these pills or whatever the fuck it is. To me, that's the devil speaking. What are your thoughts?
It's 100%. Now, I don't know what your views are. I tell people I'm not a Christian. I'm a Christ follower. I can't stand a lot of the hypocrisy of Christianity. I grew up Catholic, went to all Catholic grammar school for 8 years. I am a Christ follower. If you do not think that this is satanic, you are out of your mind. This is the greatest tactic Satan has. We have self-idolatry, right? Dogs and kids are the same thing. If you own a dog, it's your responsibility to be the pack leader. Tire your dog out, exercise your dog so your dog knows the place. It's your job to lead your kids. It's your job to raise them so the kids are never confused about when they're going to eat, if they're safe, what their dad is going to do to protect them. End of story. I remember being a child, being 8 years old in bed, looking at the ceiling and trying to contemplate the concept of infinity. You mean when I die, I'm going to heaven forever? It was so overwhelming. Now you're going to tell me that a 5, 8, 10, 12-year-old can flow in and out of gender? Well, this is Satan's greatest plan, because if black is black, white is white, water when liquid is wet, the sun's going to rise tomorrow, but I can change the definition of the genitalia between your legs to fit whatever narrative you want, that means you don't believe you were created perfectly by God. That means you think God is fallible. That means you don't need God. Yes. Shit, Satan did his job. Yep. This is all, it is a one, and I don't, people like to sit there and they sound crazy and they're like, oh, it's a religious war. No, it is satanic on every level. It's just God, just Satan is trying to say, you don't need God. Yeah, you're your own God. And that's going to lead to be what I said. It's hard to be focused if you're confused. The confusion on that level. Oh my God. It's the epitome of confusion, especially when you bring in sexuality, which is one of the hardest things for boys to control. So it is pure a satanic agenda.
I love that. Spot on. Let's talk about media's trying to do everything they can right now to make every common man, because that's what it is, the smart guys, they're not gonna sway them in any way, shape, or form. But the common man, the average man, the man that just sits there and kind of picks his nose from time to time and watches TV and gets his news from memes and what others are saying without doing a fucking bit of search research himself. What do you think is going to happen here over the next couple of years with this media? I mean, do you think we are headed in a direction where there's going to be a monster explosion where, you know, people are going to just come out of the woodwork and say, hey, man, this is enough with this, you know, bipartisan, completely, you know, this way of just painting a picture for people out there, and then you're seeing these pictures that they're painting and you're like, wait a minute, this shit didn't happen. That's not the way it happened. I learned that as a cop when I used to hold a position in perimeter and the newscasters used to come up to me and say, hey, you want to tell me what's going on? And I said, look, I don't really can't say. All I can maybe give you is that it's an accident here. That's about it. 2 minutes later, they were running with some bullshit make-believe story. That's when I started to see what this media is all about. What is your take on the media now that we have and where it's going here over the next few years?
I think they're some of the biggest fucking scumbag people on the planet. And I think what's even worse is the people who believe them. I got really outraged at obviously the attacks over Trump for years, but then I started to realize that we're no better, right? When Biden was running for office and Biden started saying, you know, I was going door to door and telling people I'm Joe Biden, I'm running for Senate and this and that. And people were going, see, he doesn't even know what he's running for. I had to stop and go, no, we're not going to play this game like liberals do. What Joe was doing was he was talking about the days he was running for senator back in the 70s and 80s. So we're just as bad. And I think what we have on both sides is this need to be right. Right in that moment. And what does that do? I mean, if you and I are screaming and we're at a restaurant and the, I don't know, the waitress says, you want a Coke or a Diet Coke, and walks away, and you and I are arguing over what she asked, right? And I go, no, she asked me if I want a Diet Coke. And you said, no, she said a Coke. And we start arguing, and she comes back with like a Coke or a Diet Coke. Even if one of us is right, what does that do? Oh, I guess I was wrong. Okay, cool. And we just move on. It does absolutely nothing. But the lack of outlet is what it comes down to. Meaning, you can't do a damn thing about it. We all saw that they're now twisting Trump's bloodbath words out of play.
Yeah, again, I saw that.
Again, it's you like Trump, you don't like him, whatever it is. What they're doing is wrong. What you can't do is you can't go to the local station, grab these people by the face, open their eyes with toothpicks or like Clockwork Orange and say, read this exactly how he said it. There's no effect for the cause. Nothing. We had classical conditioning growing up. If I talk shit about you in school and it got to you, you confronted me, we know what was going to happen. There was going to be a cause and effect action. We don't have that anymore. It's lawmakers aren't doing anything about it. These journalists are immune. And I don't remember if it was under Reagan or Nixon, but if you deliver the media back in Walter Cronkite's day, it had to be factual on one side and you had to report the other. Now it's all opinion. It's all it is. So now we are the most selfish people on the planet, which is just me, 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 me. This is my opinion. This is my opinion. And we are so manipulative. What kills me is that there hasn't been physical retribution. Like when I ran for office, I found out as a political candidate, you have zero protection against slander or anything else. They can say whatever you want about you and you have to deal with it. And I'm like, okay, this does suck X, Y, and Z, but think about the normal, think about whoever, right? The hard MAGA Republican who listens to Trump being slander left and right all day long. I'm surprised these people haven't broken yet. And these people haven't banded together and said, we're tired of this shit. And they haven't held the media physically responsible. Again, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to go down this path. I don't want to think it, but unless there is physical responsibility, okay, you want to go online and you want to tell everybody that your 10th booster is going to do whatever, but we have the science that comes out that says you're going to die from X, Y, and Z. You need to be physically have the shit beat out of you for your words. Sadly, society doesn't work like that. In my world, it's just like be like the old West. You know, you get have a gun pulled on you and shot if you said something is disrespectful. I think we need to go back to some measure of that.
Yes, I agree. Talk to me about what you do to keep yourself sharp. I ask this question on every podcast. Let me dive into your life a little bit. And how do you stay strong? How do you stay strong in body and in mind? I know you're a big martial artist, but for those listening, and it's important because this podcast, it's not just about being a warrior-minded man. It's about really being a man of a higher level, man who is worldly, that understands what's going on around him, but more importantly, a man who is honing himself in mind, body, and spirit. So I want to know what you do, say on a daily basis or a weekly basis, to keep yourself sharp in body and mind.
I take no enjoyment or pleasure in anything anymore. And this is a very interesting season of my life. And it's been for about 6 months. The gym is an effort. I don't enjoy it. I've been doing it since I was 15. I do not enjoy the gym anymore. Eating properly, I don't enjoy it. Sleeping, I don't even enjoy sleeping because I feel I can get something done. The more I fight the negativity, the worse mentally I am. And I've had lots of conversations in prayer to God saying, all right, I finally submitted to, this is a season in my life where I have to embrace the angst, the negativity, even the anger to navigate it. Now I'm not, 21 and anger and can't control it. I find out what is the pain, the source of pain and emotional stress. And I do not try to control it. Meaning I don't sit there and say, all right, I'm gonna sit down and in prayer and pray for my enemy, this and that. No, I attack. And I've asked in prayer, is it righteous in this season of my life to be on such a war path? And because I've tried to control that for so long, I think this is the time and the season where it's war. I find myself, just for an example, like comments, right? If there's a comment, I say this all the time, I'll never throw the first punch, but I'll just destroy you if you make a comment. And in my comment section where people will attack me, I will completely attack your credibility back. I don't believe in punching down either, but I believe in holding people to the highest standard possible, because by doing that means I have to hold myself to the whole highest standard possible. Mm-hmm. I put up a video the other day. I wanted to bench press to see what I could do. And I repped out 315 pounds and I was very impressed with myself. And then somebody in the comment section said, well, go all the way down. And I said, well, I have no spotter and it was just me and there's nobody else in the gym. So I came an inch from within chest. I said, why don't you show me you could do it? The guy sent me a video of how he manipulated plates to where he had two 45 pound plates so the camera could see it, and then two 25 pound plates on either side of it. So, mm-hmm. and he teaches men how to be masculine. So I DM'd him and I said, whoa, are you out of your fucking mind? You're teaching men, but then you want to manipulate and lie. And I got so pissed. I thought about this for a second. And this hopefully answers your question. I put it up publicly, and I put it up publicly because it wasn't to expose him. It was to say, I'm tired of men not having integrity. I'm tired Amen. Of fucking lying. I'm tired of men manipulating just to do whatever. And I got blocked. But the point of it was, is now that I just put it out there means my integrity had better always be intact. My integrity had always, but my words and actions better always match. So I embrace this season of fighting. And I try to strive for peace. I'm not happy if there's peace. I'm happy when there's conflict. And I know that sounds sadistic, but being in conflict means that I have to have integrity. I have to have character. I have to be righteous, not right. I have to be righteous. And that means that I always have to be at the top of my game. So that means I have to stay sharp. So in a way to answer your question, I purposely embrace all the shit that's going on and I absorb the negativity. It does not come out positive. It's very stressful, but it keeps me at a reminding level of don't be as full of shit as what you're accusing these other men to be. So that's where my status is right now. It's saying you're not happy. You're not having a fun time. The world is going to shit. But if you're going to play in this box of shit, then you're going to wind up being dirtier than everyone else, but you're going to get clean afterwards. So it's a very interesting season for me right now.
You're combative as hell and on a war path. That's your season right now. Take it. No reason to do it otherwise, because as a man, you have that energy inside of you. Sometimes you just got to let it out. And this is your time to shine right now. All right, Dominic, where can people follow you? Where can people reach you? I know you have a great radio show.
Yeah, we're on the Rants of Izzo, R-A-N-T-S, Rants of Izzo, and it's on Spreely Media. My name is Dominic Izzo, D-O-M-I-N-I-C-K-I-Z-Z-O. You can find me on social media. But we're live Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you want to listen or watch the podcast, it's all available out there, therantsofizzo.com. You can find out all the podcast versions out there. But we talk about everything from porn to politics to stream of consciousness. I have great guests on like you. We can engage in some amazing conversations. And my way is not right. I am not right. I'm extremely opinionated. And my goal is to put information out there. If I'm challenged, excellent. If I can learn, excellent. And hopefully I do want to find that the principle of attracting, right? If I can attract men like you, other men of integrity, other men of standard, well, that just means I have to raise my game even more, right? If you're in a, so I try to attract men who are like you, so that I can level up, because like I said in the beginning, I'm an army of one that knows he has to have help from others in order to achieve. So that's what we do. That's Rants of Izzo Monday through Friday.
Love it, man. Love it, brother. It's been an honor to have you on. I could sit here and speak to you for hours. I love to get together with like-minded men who are really forging that warrior's path and that mentality and that way of life. And you are definitely one of them. All right, brother. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Founder and CEO of Man of War, Rafa Conde.